Warning, because of the extreme content in this podcast, it is not appropriate for children. It contains depictions of violence, language, and disturbing subject matter. It is recommended strictly for adult audiences. Parental guidance is suggested.
My name is Joey Siaglia, and I am so excited to welcome you back for Season 4 of Murder Phone. Have you ever had a conversation with a serial killer and lived to tell about it? My brother, Tony Siaglia, a traumatic brain injury survivor and subject of the best-selling book, The Serial Killer Whisperer, has spoken for hundreds of hours with some of the world's worst serial killers. This season is titled Finding Megan Emmerich. In July of 1973, 17-year-old Megan Emmerich disappeared from Seward, Alaska. Her body has never been found. Megan was believed to be one of Robert Hansen's victims. Robert Hansen is the worst serial killer in Alaskan history, and he shared a cell with Tony's friend Manfred West for over 7 years. During that time, Hansen shared many secrets with West, including the location of his hidden cabin where we believe Megan Emmerich has been buried for over 3 decades. Tony, along with our father and co-host Al Siaglia, we'll share hours of tape-recorded conversations with Manfred West that detail some of the most intimate stories that Hansen ever shared in that jail cell. This season, with the help of prisoner Manfred West, Tony will finish the quest he started over 15 years ago, finding Megan Emmerich. This is Murder Phone.
Hey. A little late, but you're here. I like it. I like it.
Gee, I'm like Axl Rose for a concert.
Right? Yeah, a little late. A little late. I like that shirt, man.
It. You like this?
Yeah.
See?
Check I like that. It. Ah, that's really hot, man.
Yeah.
What's that called? Soul.
American Soul.
American Soul, everybody. There it is.
And then you got this number right here.
That's beautiful.
Son of a patriot.
That's beautiful cross.
You've got it too.
Yes, I do.
Show it.
There it is. Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's quite a shirt, man. I like it.
You like it?
I do. Mr. Headphone.
Yeah. All right. We're here. How'd you like that? Like Axl Rose.
Yeah.
That asshole comes in 2 hours late, though.
Oh, he's terrible.
I've seen them 6 fucking times in concert.
Yeah.
And every time he has come in 2 hours late, and I'm not lying. But who's the asshole? Him or the asshole that sits there and waits for him to make an appearance?
I was just going to say that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know. I was giving you a little respect.
What you do for good rock and roll.
Yeah. I saw him with the broken foot. Well, you were there.
I was there with
him. Yeah, when he was sitting in the throne.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Throne.
He's something.
Hey, you murder phoniacs.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Woo. Got a little hair from this. It's okay, though.
Okay.
We all know what it's like to get hair in the mouth.
Stop right now.
God, you always stop me.
Stop it.
This is your host, Tony Siaglia, the serial killer whisperer. Hey, everyone. I'm not sure how to act. I'm really feeling good right now, and you can probably tell just by looking at me. It's electrifying. Man, it's a true blessing from God. A few weeks ago, I was at my wit's end, and I didn't think it was ever going to go away. I'm going on 18 fucking straight days.
Love it.
Of no depression.
I love it.
It's like I'm laying there in my bed and I'm looking up at the ceiling and I'm like, Well, when are you gonna start making me miserable again? Not looking up at God, but just looking up at the ceiling. And I'm like, why am I feeling this way? But it's great. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. I truly believe, because I'm very spiritual. And because I met God on my out-of-body experience when I died three times, I gave him, actually, my dad told me to give it all to him. He died on that cross for me, for you. So I'm giving him my depression. And he took it on his shoulders and he hung on that cross for me. Ever since I gave him the depression, I have felt a relief.
I love it.
Like a burden lifted off my chest. Let's just hope it stays.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. I can't really put into words how it feels to be feeling good. All I know is I fucking love it.
So do I.
And I'm going to enjoy every second of it while I can.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, everybody, we had Bill Satterberg on a video Saturday, and it was a great discussion. This guy's, he's fucking sharp, isn't he, Dan?
Oh, man.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's sharp.
Yeah.
What a storyteller, too.
Yeah. I mean, awesome.
Just great. We will be sharing it with you all next week. Trust me, you won't want to miss this video and this discussion. Okay, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty, and we're about ready to put all the information that we have compiled over the years and find that cabin.
Can I interrupt you, like, really quick?
Sure.
Because you said we're going to be sharing all next week. We're just doing our normal. It's supposed to be, we're going to be sharing it with all of you. So people are probably going to get confused and think, you know, every day we're going to be having a podcast with Bill. It's a long one, but it'll just be, I think it's Monday the 15th, May 15th, I believe. This one will drop it. I don't know if that's important or not, but, you know, people write in and say, you know, you really having, you know, podcasts every day? No.
Did I screw up?
Well, you just said we're going to be sharing it all next week. And it's supposed to be with all of you.
I didn't know you're a teacher. You're correcting me.
I corrected you. What do you think?
I like it.
I like it myself.
You do? You like it yourself? I know you like it yourself.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry for all the mumbling and corrections.
It's pretty sexy, though. Shows me that you're paying attention.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We're getting down to the nitty gritty. And we're about ready to put all the information that we have put together over the years and find that cabin. It's not going to be easy.
No.
Bill told us that.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Alaska's full of a lot of nature. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But with the help of Manford, Bill Satterberg, and all of our loyal murder phoniacs, we will accomplish this. And I really feel we will.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah. Here is an email from Francine. our first Murder Phoniac member. And a fucking great lady.
Yeah, she is.
Isn't she?
Yeah, she is.
Oh,
awesome.
She's solid, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This email was so sweet and heartfelt, I had to share it. Here is email. First, Tony, I'm so glad you are feeling better. I'm learning a lot about TBIs and have to admit I never really knew much about them. So thanks for educating me. No. Thank you, Francine, for taking the time to educate yourself. And that means the world to me. Thank you. You made your dad cry with your comments. And so there I was blubbering too. He is your guardian angel. Archangel Al. I can just see him with his big wings, sheltering you and the rest of your family. You are a lucky man. Well, Francine, he's a big man. Those wings better be really fucking big to keep him afloat.
Thank you.
Oh. Now, if you are really planning to go to Alaska to look for that cabin, tell me how I can help. I'm serious. There has to be a crusty old timer in Alaska that could act as your guide. They'll have big guns to protect you from the bears, too. They know that country. I'm more than happy to chip in for your costs.
Wow.
That's. Remember when we were reading this?
Yeah.
We stopped and we looked. Wow.
That's all you could say.
Yeah. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
My monthly subscription. Were you going to say something?
No.
Okay. My monthly subscription to your podcast has been more than worth it. You are doing God's work. And if I could contribute even just a little bit towards your goal, well, I'll bet St. Peter would remember that when I make it to the pearly gates.
Francine, you don't have to contribute to make it to the pearly gates. I guarantee you that much. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good lady.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Don't be shy about letting me know how I can help. I can't be your guide, but maybe I could help to pay for one. Wow.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Greetings to all the family. Thanks, Al, for being Tony's main man. And Tony, I know things really suck for you, but you are loved. Thank you. Thank you, Francine. And I'm feeling really good right now. So I wrote back, Francine. Thanks, Francine. That was one of the sweetest emails I've ever received. The fact that you're learning and understanding TBI better makes me smile. And it does.
Yeah, I know.
You have been more than generous with your support, and I want you to know it is much appreciated. I want you to know we love your offer to help find Megan. When we figure out how we're going to go about it, we'll let you know. We're also hoping that many of our fans will also understand how important this mission is and will help in any way they can. God bless you. You're awesome. Tony.
That was amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah. Thank you, Francine. I don't know about Archangel, but thank you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. What are you doing? You're sitting there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you want me to introduce you or something. Well,
be nice.
Here he is, folks. The fucking Coxman. Al Ciaglia. You know, he's like a bad case of herpes. He just keeps coming back.
What the fuck?
I mean, you could treat him with medicine, but it's still going to come back. What did you tell me in the car? I just totally flubbed it.
No, you didn't. What do you mean? I just said, don't introduce me, and then I won't have to fucking talk. I can just sit here. You know? Because he's always complaining. I want to say this. I want to say that. And I always tell him, you really can't. And so I said, listen, don't introduce me. I'll just sit there like a fucking dummy. And you could say whatever you want. That's what I told you.
Okay.
But now you've introduced me, so fuck you. I'm going to start talking. So what do you think of that? Huh? How do you like it? Can I talk?
It's all you.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Francine. And thanks for sharing that. That was awesome. We appreciate everything you do. All right, everybody, we are now present day. Everything we do from now on is about finding the cabin and, of course, bringing Megan Emmerich home. And we got a show for you. We've got some conversations I think you're going to really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we had to make sure that Manfred's still on board because even though Tony and he stayed friends and they talked and we just wanted to make sure that he was still on board and wanted to go through with finding this cabin. So I'm going to share Tony's most recent question to Manfred in the conversation that followed.
Hey, how do you feel about trying again to find the cabin where Hansen buried Megan Emmerich?
Well, I'd like to do it. My name doesn't need to be involved in this case, you know, for whatever reason, but I would like to find it. It's the one right thing for me to do. But the problem is the only one I'm going to be trusting is you because I did a couple of interviews before and I'm not happy with the way they went down. So if you're involved in the situation, then I'm willing to do whatever I can to find that cabin. That's very important for me to do that. It's probably the one good thing that I can do while I'm doing this prison time and do something right in my life.
That's great.
Like I say, it's got to be with you. I don't want a bunch of people in there that I don't know asking me all kinds of stuff. Because I just don't like people. I mean, I've been in prison a long time, and I don't trust a lot of people.
What did Hansen tell you?
Go ahead.
Okay. What did Robert Hansen tell you about the cabin and Megan?
Well, the first thing we started, before he told me about Megan, he told me about the cabin. He said, I built this cabin. He said, I built it so I would have a place to go and... He told me he built it with his wife and his two young kids at the time. Later on, it became a cabin where he went. But he built this cabin when he had his boat in Seward. He didn't have an airplane yet. He just had his big boat there in Seward.
Oh, okay.
And, he hadn't had his airplane. Because where this was, where he was building this was only accessed by boat. And... there was a barge that went aground, and on Montague Island years ago with a bunch of wood on it. And he used the wood, he loaded that wood off that barge onto his boat, and then he took his boat through Prince William Sound to this hidden location, and he built his cabin. And then later on, from my understanding, after he told me they built it and what he put in the cabin, there was a gun in the cabin, there was a stove, and they went to some place called Franklin's store in Anchorage and brought a better wood stove to take out there. So they had the cabin a while with his wife before anything else. Now, he did tell me that there was a place where he was able to get there by plane. I don't know where that was because he never gave any details on that.
Okay.
But he told me that he took two girls out there by boat. This was back in the early days. So that's how that all started. And at first he didn't tell me who they were or what the girls' names were. The only one I actually got a name from, well, he did tell me, but I can't remember because it's been so long ago. I remember I mentioned Megan, and I can't remember the other girl's name. So I don't really...
Mary?
Remember? It may have been. I can't say. All I know is he told me this, that he took two girls out there by the boat.
Okay.
The boat, and they didn't return. And then he started kind of acting weird, and he said, well, one of them went in the bay, and one of them was buried. Well, you know, when somebody's laying in bed, you're laying in bed in the evening time, and somebody's talking to you, and they put wet toilet paper over the intercom so nobody can hear what's going on, it's kind of awkward to ask questions in the middle of a serious conversation like that. You know, I didn't want to start asking questions and have him freeze up and not say anything.
So you just let him talk?
Yeah, I just let him talk.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, personally, at that time in my life, I didn't know there was girls missing back in the 70s. I was still thinking about his airplane crap, you know.
Uh-huh.
So it was kind of interesting to me, so I just let him talk. Then later on, he decided that he wanted me to actually try to get out of that prison and go to this cabin and live there. And I thought that was kind of crazy, but I went along with it. We bullshitted, and then that's when he started telling me how he built the cabin and what was in the cabin. I mean, I could stay out there forever, and they'd never find me ever in the world. Nobody knows how to find it except for him. And that went on for a couple of years, and I kind of played along with him. Yeah, I'll find a way out of here, and I'll sneak out there and find it. And he kept telling me how to go down the sewer and steal a boat and go around Thumb's Cove, and pretty much that I could find it if I kept checking all the crevices in the rocks. I mean, his story was kind of like out there.
Uh-huh.
There's no way in the world that I was going to do any of that. But, you know, it was fascinating to listen to him. Even though, personally, I thought it was all bullshit. And
I could see that, why you thought
it. But it was a story, and I liked hearing it, you know. I mean, we started talking. He asked me about my crime first. So, you know, I grew up a lot like he did. I grew up in the woods. I grew up trapping and hunting with a father that was very mean. So we had a lot in common in that area, and I think that's what first made him start cussing me enough to tell me things.
Wow. Yeah.
He came up with this crazy idea that I needed to leave that prison and get out there and hide, and they never. And I asked him, well, why don't you do it? He says, I'm too old, I can't do it, but you could.
Oh.
You know, I don't know if he was saying that because he wanted me to actually try it, whether he wanted me to get killed trying, or whether he thought I could actually do it, and he'd get credit for it because I was his roommate. I don't know. I don't know what was going on in his head. He's a very odd individual.
Yeah, I'd say. It sounds like you got his trust, especially about how you were raised and how he was raised and how he saw some similarities in his...
You have 1 minute left.
I'm going to have to call you back. You're cutting me off.
Okay.
I'll call you right back in about a minute.
Okay.
All right.
See you, bud.
I hope you guys liked that.
That was
discussion.
I like the way you put it to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just hey, you know, do you want to do this? How do you feel about doing this? And it's obvious, you know, he's fed up, guys. You know, you could tell he wants to do it, but the only one he trusts is Tony. And, you know, I can't blame him. You know, we went down the road and it was very disappointing. And I know we've shared our work with you, but doing it was a bitch.
Yes.
It was a lot harder than just sharing it. So I understand he doesn't trust people. He doesn't even like people, according to Manfred. And he's going to trust Tony, and that's cool. And we trust him. So I think, as Tony said, with Manfred and with our information, with the information that we still have that we compiled with Missing and Exploited Children, and now with Bill Satterberg and some other additional pieces, I think we're going to find that cabin, guys. We know that he built it with his wife and his two children, right?
Yeah.
He had his two kids out there.
Isn't it? Yeah, and his wife.
And his wife.
And what he was planning on doing there.
Yeah.
It's just eerie, creepy, kind of intertwined. Yeah.
And you know that's what he was thinking.
Of course.
I mean, who goes and does that?
Yeah, out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, well, come on, honey. Let's bring the kids on a little vacation. We're going to travel by boat to some remote area in Alaska, and we'll build a cabin.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
Yeah, because she was thinking more like, are you sure, honey, we can't go to like
maybe Hawaii?
Europe? Hawaii?
Right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that was confirmed back when Missing and Exploited Children were involved. So it was confirmed by Hansen's wife. They built that cabin. And he also only had the boat back then. And the only way you could get to this cabin then was by boat. He didn't have the plane. So he wasn't thinking plane then.
Mm-hmm.
Just the boat. Oh, and where was the boat docked? In Seward. Wasn't it?
Straight shot.
Yeah. So the wood he used, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Montague Island.
Yeah. Not the same wood I would use.
No. I figured you would say that. So, I mean, this was really a good conversation that you had. But I got to point out, Montague Island, the fact that he used the wood from Montague. Montague is like over 300 square miles. It's one of the biggest
islands.
Right? Islands in the world, yeah. So it's not like it would be nice to know where the barge went and went ashore and where the wood was. I think we're going to be able to find that out. That'll be a great clue.
Mm-hmm.
But he told Manfred that he took two girls out there by boat. One was named Megan, and we know he took her there in 1973. Even though he denies it to the police. He told Manfred, two girls went out to the island and neither one of them returned. Megan, but he couldn't remember the other name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you asked him, was it Mary? And
Mary.
And Manfred said, yeah, I think so. I think. But Manfred, you know, he took in a lot of information from this asshole. So I understand he's going to forget some things.
He buried Megan.
Yeah.
And he put Mary Thill in the bay.
Yeah. That's what he said, right? Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
Don't you wonder how many bodies might be there? It's unreal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, you know, Manfred let him talk, and it was very difficult for him, which I can imagine. Imagine sharing the cell with that fucking guy.
Cells are small.
Yeah. It's horrible.
Very.
So they, you know, then he came up with the idea, you know, when he's out there looking in the yard, looking over, he's telling Manfred, hey, you know, right over the glaciers is where the cabin is. You could escape from here and you could live there forever. No one would find you.
Because it's so easy to escape from prison, right?
Oh, yeah. And like Manfred, he was smart. He went along with him and he said, you know, at no time was I ever even considering that fucking crazy shit. But he let him talk, and he went along with it. And You know, almost every time they were out in the yard, he'd mention it. He'd look. He'd say, it's right over there. You could walk to it. How are you going to walk over a glacier? I don't know. Mm-mm. Nobody's figured that out. But he didn't. I think that was just, that was just terminology. You could walk there. I think what he meant, though, because he told him, just go steal a boat and take it and, you'll find it. I'll give you the directions. Nobody knows them but me. So.
And us.
Yeah. It took a long time, but we know. And that's why Hansen, they were kind of raised the same way. They were, raised, by strict fathers. Manfred's dad, was really an asshole. But I think that's why Hansen had that bond with him, why he opened up to him so much.
Hold on. I was just in another place.
Yeah?
Was Hansen's father a piece of shit?
He was strict.
Uh-huh.
But according to Manfred, Hansen's upbringing was a picnic compared to his.
Yeah.
But Hansen used to complain about it. His father was very strict. And it was like his way or the highway. So, and you remember the stories about Manfred's dad.
Yeah.
What he was like.
Piece of shit.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Take it away, guys. Buddy.
All right.
I got to talk.
You did very good.
Thank you.
Very good.
I almost left.
Now, though, I want you to drink.
I will.
You do. You need to drink.
I'll do it. What do you think?
Before I start talking.
Yeah.
Which will be pretty short because we're going to play more clips. Tell the audience about your tooth.
Oh, I don't want to go into that.
Oh, you don't?
No, you don't want to discuss these poor people.
Wow.
Just more shit with the tooth. Yesterday.
Yeah, but you got some really bad infections out of there.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which is really good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Had to be done.
Yeah.
Hell to get old.
All right. So let's keep the cabin conversations going, okay?
He said he took the kids out there in the boat, but they were very young, and they may not remember any of it.
Okay. He actually had the kids at the cabin, huh?
That's what he said.
He's a real prince, isn't he? Or wasn't he?
The reason I know he said that, because he told me at the cabin there were toothbrushes out there for each one of the kids, and toothbrushes for him, toothbrush for his wife, and he said they were sleeping bags and a 12-gauge shotgun and so on and so forth. So, he pretty much detailed, but I don't think the kids couldn't have been that old. I don't know when they were born. I don't know their birthdays or anything like that, but I think he said they were like 6 and 7, maybe 5 and 6. I'm not really sure.
Young, yeah.
But he did say he took the kids out there, so.
Do you remember talking about a rock? He had a picture of a rock. It was
Yeah. He had a picture in his photo album of this rock, and he told me that rock. He said he shot a seal. He was selling seal meat or something to the Koreans there in Anchorage. But he said he shot a seal, and the seal floated behind the rock. So he had to take his little dinghy boat off the big boat and take that and row out there to find the seal. When he got behind the rock, he found the outlet into the crevice of where he built the cabin. But he said he couldn't get all the way in there at the time. He couldn't get his big boat in there because it was full of logs over the years. Like I said, that little area had filled up with logs, and he could just barely get his dinghy in there.
Okay. Really?
But that picture is actually in his photo album, which might have went to his sister.
The only answer I got. It's not a question, but I'm kind of like amazed that Alaska, the wilderness, is such that Hansen built that cabin, in the 80s, and nobody has ever stumbled upon it. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Well, not really, because you got to remember, if you look at that coastline, I've been out on Prince William Sound, I think, once or twice. I was drunk both times on a boat, but if you look at that coastline, it's all rocks.
Yes.
Basically, rocks coming off one of the waterfalls, right? And now, he explained that very carefully. He shot a seal.
and the seal floated behind these rocks. And he went behind the rocks with his small boat, oar boat, to get the seal. And when he got behind the rocks, he noticed an opening in the cliffs. He went back into a little cove by it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
He explained this to him. He said he couldn't get back in there because it was full of logs that had drifted in over the years. And then he said later on, he went in there and he pulled in logs out himself and pushed them back out into the bay so that he could get his big boat, this 34-footer, in there. And you're talking about maybe 20 feet across in these rock bridges. I mean, and he's the type of guy, like he said, he didn't have it back up underneath the tree so it couldn't be seen. So if you flew over it, you wouldn't see it, okay?
Right.
If you were out there with a boat going by the front, you don't know there's a cave back in there, so you just went on by. If he would have never known that, if he hadn't shot the seal and it floated around the back of those rocks. So, perfectly camouflaged, you know, most people that go out there, they don't look, they don't go ashore, because that's all federal land. They don't go ashore. They go out there and they fish, and they stay away from the coastline.
Okay. Well, see, when you describe it, because you know the area, well,
yeah.
You know Alaska, it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, well, the people that are out there, they don't get close to the coast of the shoreline because there's sharp rocks and the boats can sink or whatever. And, you know, it's all federal land, so there's no, you know, you can't just park your boat and go hunting and fishing on that land.
Oh, nobody can go out there? Can they get a license to go out there or no?
Well, no, you can go out there, and you can probably go to shore, but you've got to find a place where you can dock your boat, climb up on the rocks, whatever. And the chances of people doing that are about zero. You've got to have a reason to do that. There is no reason to go ashore.
Okay.
Unless you're just a sightseer. I mean, the opportunity's there, absolutely.
You have 1 minute left.
I'm going to have to give you a call back.
Okay. Talk to you in a minute.
Okay. So, we know Hansen took his two young kids to the cabin, which is just utterly repulsive, you know? But he's fucking utterly repulsive. So,
what did I say? A real prince.
A real prince.
Fuck.
So, but, you know, so we'd expect someone like him to do something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I, I don't want to steal the thunder.
Go for it.
I just want to, this rock thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's a little confusing, but it's really interesting. There's a picture of a rock in a photo album that Hansen had that he showed to Manfred. So he has that picture, and it's a rock that comes up out of the water right in front of where the cabin is, in the area of where the cabin is. So it'd be a great clue. And the seal that he shot, it floated behind that rock. And that's how why do I say that?
You said it because, they were both into seals.
That's right. He ate the seal's heart.
Yeah.
Raw. Haddon Clark.
Haddon.
It's a beaut. Anyway, the seal floated behind the rock after he shot it. And so Hansen went behind the rock and he had to take the dinghy off his boat because he couldn't really fit. And he saw the crevice leading into the cove where the cabin is. And that's how he stumbled on it. And it was kind of an accident. Which is interesting. But there is a photo of it, and we're going to try and get it. We'll see.
You know, that would really help, though.
Oh, it would help a lot.
Yeah.
It would definitely help a lot.
It's like X marks the spot.
Yeah.
Rock marks the spot.
Because Manfred said, we asked him, he said, yeah, it would help. He said, but he's still confident, you know, with the maps and everything that they have now, Google Earth. Yeah, he'd be able to put us within, what did he say? 1 mile of it or like right on top of it. So that's great.
Al?
Yeah.
Ass. How could no one had stumbled over the cabin in 50 years? And that's a very good question. I've always thought that too.
Right.
1970, not 1980, Manfred explains why. The coastline is all rocks. Take it from here.
You're doing great.
Okay.
I'll take it. Whatever you want.
All right. It's you.
It was an interesting conversation, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And Tony and I both, even though I asked the question, it had puzzled us the whole time, you know, we're trying to do this, even with the missing and exploited. How did nobody find this? It was built in the 70s. Nobody stumbled across it, right? So, as Manfred, you heard him say, no, you got to figure. Like Tony just said, the coastline is all rocks. And Hansen, he shot the seal the way I just explained, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And it went behind the rock. And that's how he found the cove where the cabin is. There was so many logs, he said, in this area that he couldn't get the big boat in. So he's thinking, I got to get those logs out of the way, right? So he manually pushed the logs out of the cove using one of his kids, mm-hmm. Prince that he is, this little 7-year-old boy. Yeah, push those fucking logs. It's probably like Manfred's dad when he was having him unload the truck, remember?
Yeah.
Come on, let's get him going. I got things to do. Got booze to drink. But anyway, he cleaned the logs out and got his boat in there. And that's where he built the cabin. That is the desolate spot. But Haddon is Hansen is a smart guy. So is Haddon when it comes to killing and hiding and not having things found. He told Manfred he built the cabin not to be found. So is anybody going to stumble on it? Probably not, because he built it under trees, so it was totally camouflaged. So if you fly over it with a plane or a drone or a helicopter, you're not going to see it. There was no drones back then, but he was talking mainly about planes. So people that go in that area, they're not sightseers. It's a different deal. The people that go in that area are fishing. They're fishermen. There's great fishing there, according to Manfred. So the coastline is tough. So people aren't going to take the chance of wrecking their boat on those rocks just to go ashore there, like Manfred said. For what? There's no reason to go ashore. That's what he said. We have a reason to go ashore, but the sightseers didn't.
No. You know how you were just talking about that Google Maps?
Yeah. Google Earth, Google Maps.
Yeah, Google Earth.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you put in my fucking address, that camera will come down to my neighborhood and I'm in front of my house going like this and I'm naked and then I start streaking the block. Check it out. The Serial Killer Whisperer. Oh.
What address is that?
Yeah, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Crazy, man. Am I still up? I just feel like I'm talking a lot.
You are. I'm enjoying it.
Are you?
I just throw in like meaningless bullshit like what I just said about
that. I like it. Yeah. I like it.
I like you.
So?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love you.
I love you, Bert.
Okay, now we're a little crazy. You can tell he's feeling good, right? Now we're going to get off the cabin for a little bit. Shane Emmerich talked with us last week, and we're going to play another conversation with him that is going to blow your
load.
No.
mind.
It's going to blow their socks off or their mind, not load. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, though, for sharing.
You like it?
Now, this is a conversation, man. You guys are going to. We played the whole thing. There's 15 minutes of him talking. And he's talking about things that no one has ever heard before, ever, including his father. This is really interesting.
This is a prepaid collect call from
Manfred West,
an inmate at Goose Creek Correctional Center.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
To accept charges, press 1. To refuse, thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Hey.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Okay. Is this Shane or Manfred?
No, Shane.
Oh, okay. Shane. Okay. Good deal.
Shane, do you have any questions for us?
Not too many, I don't think. I've talked to Fred quite a bit about it, and
okay.
I kind of gathered the story on the situation and everything. And
that's good, though, that you know about us. And
Fred, he kind of told you the whole, like, the past history of what he and Tony had done? And
yeah.
Okay, great. You know, it's interesting. Manfred said to us, what are the odds, you know, of you guys winding up knowing each other? And then he and Tony started this up again. He said it must be meant to happen because the odds are really long that you two guys would wind up there and know each other. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I got sent to Seward, and from there I got transferred into Anchorage for medical stuff, and I didn't know it. I didn't know who he was, but Robert Hansen was in the van with me.
Oh, my gosh.
Really?
By that time, yeah, he was sitting right in front of me. By that time, he was in his 70s. He was pretty sick. He was in a wheelchair, couldn't hardly walk. And like I said, I didn't know who he was. So when we got to Anchorage, I actually pushed his wheelchair with him in it into the jail. And because I did, they put him and I in the same cell.
Really?
I found out during our talking, I found out who he was. And I really didn't know how to handle that because, you know, my whole life I've heard about this guy, you know, what he did, and we talked for probably the better part of 2 hours, and he claimed he didn't know who Megan was or anything. He didn't know the names. He just knew, you know, he just saw them as prey. He didn't. And And part of me was angry and hurt and disgusted, and but at the same time, you know, my whole life I've pictured him in my mind as this, you know, kind of a monster. But what I saw was this broken down old man that was on his way out. You know,
Oh my gosh! Thanks for sharing that.
That had to really be a shock.
Did you tell him who you were?
Yeah.
I did. I told him the whole story, you know, about what I knew.
Uh-huh.
And my grandmother. And I told him that, you know, I had never met her. That I'd never met him before then. And because of that, I didn't feel I had really a right to be angry about the whole thing.
Okay.
For whatever it was worth, I forgave him for the wrongs that he did. And he actually broke down crying and said that no one has ever said that to him before. And it was only a few minutes after that they rolled me up and moved me to a different cell. And that was the last I saw him.
Wow.
And I heard about it on the news that he had passed away not long after that. But, I still can't help but wonder where where she ended up at, or what actually happened. You know, if she got shot, or who knows? But I've heard lots of stories, and I read part of the story on him in the book Murder at 40 Below. It's all different stories outside in Alaska.
Yeah.
And his story was in there, and Megan is actually named in that story. Yeah, I didn't know if she was tortured or if she was killed quickly, or, you know, I can only hope for something like that to be quick, you know, as painless as possible. But not something anyone should have to go through. But
your father, did you tell him that you met him?
No, I didn't. I didn't know at the time how he would handle that.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
I could only contact him through mail, and I didn't know how he would handle that if he got a letter and found out that I was sitting in the same room with his sister's killer. You know.
Yeah. Probably a good move.
Yeah, because.
I know a lot of times in situations like that, people on the outside would expect some sort of retaliation or something, you know, for crimes done against the family or whatever. But I have definitely turned my life in a different direction, and I've been working in ministry here.
Oh, good for you. That's awesome.
2014.
That's great.
Yeah.
Got my associate's degree from the Urban Ministry Institute, and moved here to Charlie Mott to be a counselor and art teacher for some of the guys that are struggling with mental health issues and stuff.
Good for you, man. That's excellent.
Yeah, that really is.
Not many people can do that.
Shane, this is Al. Did you feel kind of a When you forgave him, did you feel any type of relief? Like, was it a weight off of you?
I kind of did, because, you know, my whole life I've been ingesting this poisonous soup of ridicule and negative emotions and stuff, you know, from my grandmother and my dad. That was all I heard, was how evil this guy was, and that he didn't have a right to live, or, you know, that was what my whole life had been filled with. And at that moment, it was like I let go of all of that, and it freed up. Yeah, it was like taking the rock off my back, you know. All this negativity that was weighing me down was gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
But I still wonder, you know.
It's incredible.
It is incredible.
And I'm so glad you did that. And we're pretty spiritual here. I don't know if Manfred's told you about Tony, but, you know, he had a brain injury. He died 3 times, and he had an out-of-body experience, so, I mean, I really feel that God put you in that room with him for a reason. That's just my own personal feeling. Because what are the odds of that happening?
I moved from Anchorage. I moved back to my hometown, and moved with my wife and kids into my grandmother's old cabin, and I found out after kind of exploring some of the buildings and stuff there, I had this, you know what a Quonset hut is? The old tin arch buildings?
Mm-hmm.
Military use them?
Sure.
Anyway, that was their first house there, and I found out that it is still set up the same way it was in the late 60s. Megan's bedroom is still there. Her clothes and stuff are still there. My dad's bedroom Megan or any of that. She was about 6 years old at the time, and she came in from playing out in the yard, and she asked me, she said, who's Megan? I just froze, made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I said, what? She goes, who's Megan? I said, well, she was my aunt. She passed away a long time ago. I said, why? She goes, because she talks to me sometimes.
Oh, wow.
We're living in the same house where Megan and my dad grew up.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
It really, to me, it was kind of neat, but it really scared the hell out of my wife.
Huh.
She wanted to move.
She wanted to move?
She wanted to move out. She was not liking that. But, I thought, you know, maybe there was a reason for that.
Yes. Yeah.
And then, yeah, all these years later, now I'm in prison with somebody that knows people out there that are trying to find answers. So it's a small world.
Yes, it is.
It sure is, isn't it?
Oh,
how old was your daughter when that happened?
Yeah.
Six.
Six. Was this a long time ago?
Yeah, she'll be 24 September. So.
18 years ago.
Okay.
That's just incredible.
Yeah.
Shane, does she remember? Did she ever bring it up or no?
I haven't talked to her now in almost 9 years.
Oh.
I'm not sure where she's at.
Yeah. I'm sorry, man.
I haven't talked to any of my kids since I came to jail.
Yeah.
How long have you been in there?
9 years and 1 month.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's tough. It really is.
I know. They still talk to my ex-wife, but...
Uh-huh.
I haven't had any contact with them since I came here.
Isn't she proud of you, though? I mean, it sounds like, you know, you've really done well by yourself in there.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to think so. I had it kind of rough when I was a kid. I grew up dirt poor, in a junkyard off the grid. And, I got picked on because of it. So instead of kind of cowering and allowing them to pick on me, I fought back and rebelled against everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And years later, I ended up getting into drugs for a while and kind of running with the wrong crowd and dropped out of school and got my high school girlfriend pregnant. And yeah, it was pretty rough for a while.
Yeah. Yes.
And
you have 1 minute left.
But yeah, after coming to jail, I turned everything around. I'm completely sober. I actually have plans for the future. And I'm working on my bachelor's degree in ministry. So,
yeah.
It's changed my life.
Good. That's awesome.
Fabulous.
Yes.
Can you guys call us back, or is it too late?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I will see if he will.
Okay.
All right.
We'll talk to you in a minute, hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
That was great.
Unbelievable. I hope you guys liked that. If you didn't like that, you're not going to like anything.
That was strong.
Yeah. What are the odds, you guys? What are the fucking odds of 1,500 inmates in a prison and Shane Emmerich winds up in the same mod as Manfred? It was meant to be. It was
it
meant to happen.
It certainly was.
It was a sign from God.
Hell yeah.
Yes. So Shane went to Seward for medical, right?
Yep.
This is awesome. Shane went to Seward for medical, and Hansen, fucking worm, fucking piece of shit, puddle of puke, was sitting in front of Shane, and he wound up in the same cell with, oh yes, Robert Hansen. They talked for 2 hours, but Hansen told him he didn't know names of victims. I just see them as prey. That'd be enough right there. I'd choke him to death.
I might snap his neck.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him saying it.
Oh yeah, of course.
I don't know who they are. I just, it was prey. I'm a hunter. Fucker.
Yeah.
Piece of shit.
There you were.
Yeah, worked up again.
Worked up.
I'm not supposed to do it. You know, the doctor said drink.
Drink.
Don't get worked up.
Yeah.
I just did.
Okay. I like that. You know, part of him, part of Shane was angry and hurt, but all he saw was a broken down old man.
Hmm. You know what? Shane told him the whole story about how he never met Megan, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's his aunt. So he's nicer than I am. Anyway, he told him the whole story. And at the end, he told Hansen that he forgave him. He forgave him.
Oh.
And Hansen actually broke down and cried.
He's much nicer than I am. You know, that's just like Gary Leon Ridgway.
Yeah.
Another fucking animal, fucking puddle of puke, fucking piece of shit. The green.
Yeah, Green River Killer.
The Green River Killer.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And the only time he cried was in court was when a victim's family member forgave him.
Yeah. And who was it about?
It was him, about
and,
him.
And that's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to point out. Shane's telling us, you know, we're listening. But when he said he broke down and cried, we both looked at each other and we knew it's all about him. He's a typical sociopath. Oh my God, this guy said something nice about me. No, he really wasn't saying anything nice about you.
No.
No. He said he forgives you. That's about him. That's about him getting it off his chest. But you cried because you never heard those words before. Should have heard the fucking click of the gun at that point.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You know, I mean, and Robert Hansen died soon after that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, he didn't tell his dad, which was probably a good idea.
I agree.
That he forgave him. And
yeah, I agree with you.
I do too.
Yeah, because why? Yeah, you know, his dad had been through hell, right?
And uh-huh.
I understand he has alcohol problems because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his sister. And he went through a lot of shit. So I agree with you 100%. It was a good idea not to tell him.
Yeah. He's changing his life, Shane.
Yeah.
He's changing his life and is a counselor and art teacher also.
And he's in the ministry. I think
he had which is great.
Ministry degree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. Another guy changing, right?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's great. Me, I'm a mentor. We talked about that last week.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah. About me?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, I share why I'm a mentor, what I get out of it.
Yeah.
What other people get out of it. You like that? What I get out of it, being a mentor. So, you know, he felt a weight off of him, Shane, for doing that.
Yeah.
Because he forgave Hansen. Because of Tony's story and experience, we told him, we think God put him in the room with Hansen. Yeah.
Yeah. I had said, you know, we're very spiritual. I think you guys know that. And with your story,
mm-hmm.
How did he wind up, right?
Yeah.
In that cell with Hansen, if God didn't put him there. I mean, I think it was just meant to be. What do you think?
I think so. Even though my conclusion would have been better if he snapped his neck.
Well, I agree. I agree with you. Okay. Want me to?
Yeah.
There's such a long call. We thought we'd, you know, just kind of break it up and kind of hit some of the high points. But this is really interesting. You know, they stayed in he called it like a Quonset hut. If anybody's been in the military there, they know, you know, it's like a metal house. And this is where Megan Emmerich was. And he didn't know it when he decided to stay there. Everything was the same, man. It was really interesting. Her clothes were there, you know, the bed she slept in, the pictures, her little teddy bears and dolls and everything.
A lot of murdered victims. Families, they do that.
Yeah.
They leave everything the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And her grandmother was, you know, very protective and spoiled her. I think we already covered that. But
yeah.
But he said it was just really kind of weird. And his six-year-old daughter, I thought this was really interesting. When the six-year-old daughter came out and said, "Who's Megan?" And they'd never even talked about her, according to Shane. "Who's Megan?" "Oh, well, Megan's my aunt, but I never met her because she died before I was born."
Mm.
He said, "Why?" And his daughter said, "Well, because she talks to me." Well, that did it for his wife. I would have thought it was cool.
Me too.
Shane thought it was cool. And we all agree it was kind of like, I think maybe Megan is sending a message.
How about that horror movie? Megan, the doll that created. Yeah. Well done, though.
Very. Yeah. It's creepy.
You want to see a good horror movie? It's called Megan.
Yeah. But it freaked his wife out. They moved. And Shane really felt that there was a reason that his daughter was being talked to, that it was a message from Megan. And then he says to us, which I thought was very interesting, and it's true, now he's in a prison with Manfred, who knows us on the outside, and we're trying to find Megan and bring her home. So that just, Shane was like, he said it made sense. It made all the sense in the world to him that there was a message. But then, you know, it was kind of sad because Tony asked him how old she was. She was six. And then Tony asked him if he could remember, if the daughter remembered. And then Shane had to tell us that he hadn't spoken to her since he went to prison. And
that happens.
It does. He hadn't spoken to any of his kids. Which is kind of sad because I hope he gets to, because he is changing mm-hmm. a lot. And Manfred can attest to that. And, you know, he explained to us, you know, he grew up dirt poor. You know, he was bullied and picked on. He didn't have good clothes, you know, very similar to Manfred when he was growing up. But, you know, he said he didn't run, he fought back. And that's where his problem started. He fought back.
Yeah.
He got in trouble. He hung with the wrong people. He ran in the wrong crowds. Eventually led to drug use. He got his high school sweetheart pregnant and on and on and on. And you can see, yeah, he was on the road to disaster, right?
Yeah, sad.
Yeah. But, you know, he's changing he's changing himself.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's wonderful. And he came right out and said, I've got plans when I get out of here. So that's cool. And
yeah,
I hope he does what he says he's going to do. I think he will.
I hope so.
We may have another conversation with him. I don't know, coming up. We'll see.
Well, it's good too that he's friends with Manfred, and Manfred's made this incredible change.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
So Manfred can be a mentor.
He is a true mentor.
Not me. I'm a fucking false. I'm a phony.
You're a mentor, but why are they always, you know, young, good looking, single moms? I'm just wondering.
Except that one. It was so funny because I woke up at their house and the kid's like, why is Tony already here, Mom? You know, I was mentoring.
Did she explain to him?
To the kid?
Yeah.
Probably not. He was a little young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, this isn't really Tony. This is just your imagination. Let's go have breakfast.
Yeah. We kind of shortchanged Manfred. Let's hear a little more about Hansen before we wrap.
Okay.
When, like, he'd get his women, like, at strip clubs, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he went to the Cherry Bar, and this is another thing. He was really paranoid of the Hells Angels, because a couple of the girls that he murdered were girls that worked for the Hells Angels in these strip clubs. And if one thing that really panicked the hell out of him is anytime a biker got arrested or come to jail, he was just super panicky that they were going to kill him.
Oh, that is a twist to the story. It's amazing to me he got away with it for so long.
I don't know. I never, that's beyond me. The guy is weird.
Yeah, you know, I'm saying that because he was in strip clubs, which, you know, like you said, some bikers owned it, and if the girls started going missing, between the police and the bikers, I'm surprised that he skated for so long.
Back then they didn't do what they do today. Back then they didn't really have people walking to the cars in the parking lot and stuff like that. They were pretty much trusted. It was a different time period. You're talking about back in the 80s.
Yeah, a lot different.
You know, they're just finishing off the 70s, you know. He had a pretty good attitude. You know, there in prison, he'd laugh and joke with the other guys, and he'd set out there in the mod, and we'd eat our meals together, and he'd laugh and joke with people and, you know, and bullshit with them and talk about hunting and fishing and stuff. And after mealtime, he'd spend most of his time in his room, but we'd come out and eat in the mod and socialize with people. And he was a pretty happy-go-lucky guy.
So he had a personality.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you had never seen him in your life and had no idea who he was and you met him, you'd never have any clue.
Oh. Wow. You'd
never have any clue. Not a bit. I mean, he'd sit on the bed at nighttime. I'd be on the top bunk. I could look down sometimes. You know, he'd watch. He was in love with that one lady on CNN. I can't remember what her name was, but he was in love with her. Every time she came on the news, he was just watching her, and his tongue would be hanging out of his mouth, practically drooling, watching her. And that was his girlfriend on the television.
What did you hate about him?
Well, I guess what I really hated about him was he had no remorse. He didn't seem remorseful about, you know. When I first got there, I didn't pay it any mind. I wasn't worried about his crime. I wasn't worried about my crime. I was just doing time. But when I read the book, when I read that paperback book, that's when I think I started getting irritated. Because here I am living with this guy, and he's acting like everything is hunky-dory, everything is nice as pie. And, you know, and I had my own guilt for what I had done. You know, I mean, I took somebody's life and went on the run for a while and tried to cover it up. So, you know, but I was trying to straighten my life out and all. You know, him, he acted like none of this ever happened.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And you could tell that he was, and it's the stuff that he did, like sticking a pencil in the vent above the toilet, sticking a couple of slices of bologna on it, letting it dry for a week, and then eating it. You know, shit like that, it's just irritating.
Ugh. Ugh.
Yeah, I told you that story, didn't I?
You did, but maybe I didn't catch it. So he dried out the baloney?
Yeah, like he was out in the woods hunting, you know. He dried out and let it get good and hard, but it was a vent that sucked the air out of the room, and the toilet was right underneath it, so every time he took a dump, all that smell went up through that baloney, and he would eat it.
Oh, my gosh! Okay, yeah, I didn't quite catch it. Holy shit!
Got girls out of strip clubs.
I thought that was an interesting question coming from you. Didn't he get the girls out of the strip clubs? That's very interesting, Tom.
Why don't you
explain why? You asked that. Wasn't it probably because of your background?
My background. I got dozens of girls out of strip clubs. I didn't kill them.
You
though.
Didn't hunt them and kill them.
No,
though, did
I didn't
you?
Hurt them. No,
they... but this asshole did.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just thought that was funny.
It's hard to believe he got away with it for so long.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Those were really different times back then, though. Things a lot looser then.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
Things were. And I think I was doing something when it was playing. He said they didn't walk the girls out to the cars back then, but everything was looser back then. Mm-hmm. You know, we're
except
talking
the girls.
We're talking the early 70s, you know, mid to late 70s, early 70s. He was getting Megan and Mary and some other girls. But when he started focusing on the strip clubs, things were different than they are now.
Yeah.
He couldn't do the shit he does.
Well, in Hanson, though, he had a good like personality mask that he wore. You know.
Yeah, you heard Manfred, right?
Yeah.
That's what he said. You'd never know, right?
Mm-hmm. He wore that serial killer mask. If you met him, you'd have no idea who he was. Like you just said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. That's what he said. I believe him.
And, you know, he loved the CNN news lady. That lucky lady. His tongue hanging out.
Yeah. Side of his mouth.
Drooling. That was his TV girlfriend.
How would she feel?
Yeah.
You YouTube people, you'll see it. We put the cartoon up of him sitting on the side of the bed with the tongue out, the drool coming out, and he's watching the TV. I guess, and once again, I'll say, how did you spend 7 years with that fucking guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Manfred hated that Hanson had no remorse. Hated it.
That was a great question you asked. What did you hate about him? I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
we know there was lots of things he hated about him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But the no remorse thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was... I think it really started to piss him off, right?
Yeah.
When he started to realize. Because remember, Manfred told us, he always thought it was bullshit. Because he didn't pay much attention. He didn't get to read about him until he got out of that prison.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That long?
Yeah. Yeah. He couldn't, they can't have books in Seward. So when he went to Arizona, then he got the book and he read, I think it was Butcher Baker or one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized
how much of a monster he was.
He actually did those things. Yeah. It's a fucking baloney story, buddy. Well, it had to come up again, didn't it? I heard you. You were like, oh. But I mean, we heard it earlier and now we heard it again. What the fuck? Right?
I don't really know how to react about it because I don't want to offend my brother. He likes to do that with baloney. Yeah.
He's going to kill you one of these days.
No, though, but if I was like Manfred,
yeah,
I'd like wipe my ass
Like, how do you know he didn't?
And dab it on the bologna.
How do you know he didn't?
He probably did.
Right?
Yeah. I have to ask him that next time I talk to him.
Well, why did you give that away about Joe?
Joe?
Yeah, since he's been a kid, you know. He likes getting it hard, that bologna, get it hard, and, you know, put it above the toilet by the vent.
It's disgusting.
You and him shared that bathroom when you were growing up.
Yeah,
you
know? We did.
So, I'm sorry, Joe. He gave it away. Now, one real quick thing?
Yeah.
Quick thing. You heard Manfred say no remorse. He had no fucking remorse. None. Well, go back to Shane, right? Go back to Hanson crying. That's why Tony and I knew. It's an act. It's a sociopathic act, him crying. Because you heard him. That's what he hated about him. He acted like nothing ever happened. And he could care less about those girls. So him crying was all about Hanson. The baloney, it's all about Joe.
Hanson, good definition. He's a soulless cocksucker.
Perfect.
That only cared about himself.
You got it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you enjoyed the conversations today and our silliness. You guys are great. Please check us out next week for more silliness.
And Bill Satterberg.
And Bill Satterberg. You'll love it. Boy, he's got some great stories.
Yeah, for sure.
So, guys, I think this is a good time to wrap up. Take care. Stay safe, and remember, always walk in the calm after the storm.
This is Joey Siaglia, and thank you for listening to Murder Phone, hosted by my brother Tony Siaglia, the subject of the best-selling book, The Serial Killer Whisperer, and his co-host, who also happens to be our father, Al Siaglia. For more information on the show, please visit murderphone.com, where you can ask questions, link to our social media accounts, and much, much more. If you'd like to help support the Murder Phone podcast, please go to our Buy Me a Coffee page and sign up for a membership package. You can access all kinds of cool, exclusive content that only official Murder Phoniacs can get. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and an iTunes review would be much appreciated.
Well, leave one if you liked it, but if you didn't, fuck it.
Murder Phone was written and produced by Tony Siaglia and Al Siaglia and recorded at the Level 9 Studios in Las Vegas, Nevada. A special thanks to our friend Justin Borrego for his editing magic. Join us next week for another exciting episode of Murder Phone.
Yeah, before we go, I want to give a huge shout out to all those living this life after brain injury, our new normal, as so many call it. You are awesome. Keep going. I know I will. And to my listeners that know someone living with a brain injury or other mental health issues, please be kind, be patient, and most of all, be understanding. Remember, they are doing the best they can.